Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:59 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is October 20th. Well, the yen fell through the 150 level in here today, so this is a significant event. It hasn't traded south of 150 for a long time, all the way back. Well, I was going to say 98, but that's not true. We'd have to go significantly further back, and we're looking really at the upper side of what's effectively a 35-year range for the dollar. So it's not so much a question of whether the dollar could get up to 150, but rather is it going to go much further? And if so, how much further? Will it sustain a breakout? And will there be a first step above the base? So it's a big deal. Now, obviously, there's going to be a lot of speculation about when's the Bank of Japan going to lose patience, and will they eventually intervene to support it? The government has already intervened once, and that law has been taken out. But the Bank of Japan has been very clear in stating that they're quite happy with the value of the yen. It's certainly improving the competitiveness of the Japanese economy, but it's not great news if you're buying oil. But one thing that really came to mind is that in a normal year where a zero interest rate currency like the yen was depreciating like this, then it would ignite a carry trade. And the easiest carry trade was always going to be that you would short the yen, and you'd borrow the yen. You'd use proceeds to go off and buy U.S. Treasuries. But U.S. Treasury yields have been going up so fast that the carry trade hasn't been working. So the 10-year yield was up another 9 basis points in here today. Cleared the 4% level yesterday and continues to trend higher. And investors have pretty much priced in via the swaps curve that the terminal rate for interest rate hikes is going to be somewhere around 5%. Now, let's just look at the yield curve. So we've got the 10-year. Well, in excess of 4%. The 2 year is up to 4.6%. The 1 month is only at 3.18. Oh, excuse me, 3.14. Now, that doesn't make a lot of sense. The Fed funds rate is more than likely going to go up by 75 basis points in about 2 weeks' time. At which point, I guess there's going to be a rush. What we've seen over the course of the last year, right, has been that there's a rush out of the short-dated bonds right at the end of the available term. Now, the 10-year minus the 3 month is at about 25 basis points. It's rallied somewhat in here, but as we approach the November 2nd Fed meeting, then we're going to see a significant run-up in the 3 month. It's going to have to price in rather rapidly the 75 basis point hike and the potential for more in December. And that's likely to deliver the inverted yield curve. Now, when we look at the performance of companies like Apple and Microsoft, they had these big upside key reversals last week. And it looks kind of artificial that you had a very inert environment, gapped lower, then finished above the highs of the previous 3 days. Then the day after came down, the day after that went up, the day after that gapped up, then gave up most of the advance, then recouped it. And now we're back in an environment where today we had a reasonably sized rally, and then yields started backing up again, so it gave it up. Then Tesla came through with earnings, and the earnings were fine, but they are anticipating that deliveries are going to be kind of difficult. So the share was down about 7 or 8% and bouncing from the $200 area But this is really an important area of potential support. It's the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So we have a clear downtrend. We've got a succession of lower rally highs. And what we really need to see is a clear bullish catalyst. And at the moment, Tesla is all promise and not too much on the delivery side. One thing that I think should be potentially considered is the outlook for a lot of these shares that have come back in a big way, like Netflix. So the valuation is much improved. It's down to about 26. Now, that's still not cheap, but it's certainly better than what it used to be, which was north of 300. And the share has unwound the oversold condition relative to the 200-day moving average. And they have got a couple of shows right now that people want to watch, so they're taking out subscriptions. So this is a very good example of how Netflix is going to survive in future. They have to focus on quality and producing shows that people actually will pay to watch. And if they can do that, then the company will be okay. But that means that they're going to have to concentrate on their content. And that makes it a content company rather than a tech company or a distribution company. And that also means that the growth trajectory is probably about as good as it's going to get. This suggests that we could be presented here with a good candidate for a type 3 bottom where we get prolonged ranging. And I think that that's also what we should probably anticipate for Facebook or Meta. They're really doubling down on the virtual reality. And it's a bit of a trial for them. So that's obviously something they're going to have to work on. And there's no evidence yet that the share has bottomed. But you know, then the reality is that they're still making a lot of money from advertising. And they still have some of the most popular social media platforms. So it's not like the company's going bust and they don't really have any debt. So that's not going to be an issue either. But the growth trajectory is certainly something that's going to get pegged back. And it does bring us back to the important point that. And it was something else that I was thinking about today, that you know, back in the day you would have had the yen carry trade and it would have been a major source of liquidity. And but back in the early 2000s, it was practically a truism in markets that everything is priced off the 10-year. And the 10-year is at 4.23%, so almost 4.25%. That's a really significant discount. And that kind of discount rate is something that is going to have to be overcome by every potential investment. So if you're a high yielding stock, well, then your yield has to be competitive with a risk-free rate of about 4.25. Well, if you're looking, perhaps then people are worried, well, you know, what about inflation? Then perhaps we'll just look at 1 year. And the 1 year is at 4.62. So then, how can stocks rally when the 12-month yield is at 4.6? Well, the only way they're going to rally is if they're growing well in excess of 4% a year. That's not impossible. But growth to funding growth when yields are going up like this is obviously a bit of a challenge. If you've got a dividend that's higher than that, well, that might also be attractive. What I find interesting is that companies like MasterCard and Visa have dropped below their respective 1,000-day moving averages. Now, it's not like people are stopped have stopped paying for things with credit cards, but these shares are pulling back, and they are having difficulty pushing back above their respective 1,000-day moving averages. And then let's just think about those dividends, because the yield is very low, but the growth rate is very high. Therefore, These kinds of shares are best bought following really significant pullbacks because they've got such fantastic dividend growth rates. That means that the yield on the purchase is going to be locked in and will increase over time. And when these kinds of shares pull back in an aggressive manner, then that's something that's going to be, I think, a significant entry opportunity. Visa has a very similar chart pattern, and it has an even faster dividend growth rate, and it's also below and encountering resistance in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Now, when these kinds of companies, which are basically providing liquidity, are underperforming, that's not a great sign for the consumer. So it's obviously a something that we should be taking as a warning sign. And obviously the interest margin that they enjoy is something that's going to be problematic when interest rates are rising so much. So they're probably not seeing the same kind of margin pickup that some of the banks are on their net interest income. And of course, they're very heavily dependent on what happens with the outlook for interest rates and the consumer. And the economy is slowing down. So when we think about Alcoa, aluminium is almost as integral to the economy as copper is. And the share today was able to eke out a gain. And it's priced in a lot of bad news already. But it did gap lower because earnings haven't been quite as good as anticipated. Now, I'm seeing here that revenue at Snap came in just below expectations. And that's another one of the more speculative social media platforms. And a lot of bad news has been priced in. The problem that I see is that a lot of bad news has not been priced into companies like Apple. And it's got quite a ways to get back down to the 1,000-day moving average, and there's nothing to say that it will stop there. When we think about the cloud computing sector, it was in positive territory in early trading and did finish out the day in positive territory, but was not able to hold the intraday high. So we're certainly still in a correction environment, and it's unlikely that we're going to see a significant turnaround until those bond yields start to come back down. And the continued strength of the dollar and the resilience of the oil market are additional headwinds. So the dollar index, having been in negative territory most of the day, finished out the day pretty much unchanged. The pound rebounded when there was the announcement of Liz Truss resigning, and then gave it up because whoever takes over still has a whole portfolio of problems to deal with. And there's even speculation that Boris Johnson is going to try and make a comeback. And then oil prices were following through on the upside. Following the announcement yesterday that the US is going to start buying back WTI around $70, but then it failed to follow through on the upside by the close. So higher interest rates are taking a toll. There's obviously the question about supply, but in a recessionary environment, demand is more important. And US natural gas prices continue to pull back. So we're down now into the $5 handle, and we've been down on consecutive days. This is not an environment where the US is short of natural gas. On the other hand, there is some speculation about how will natural gas reserves in Europe be allocated. And historically, the network of gas in Europe coming in and out of storage has been handled by private enterprises and has gone to the highest bidder, and it has worked because there's never really been a big shortage like we have now. So it does imply that at some point in the winter, when it's particularly cold, the biggest bidders, potentially in Germany, will be buying gas from their neighbors. And that's going to create a really big political headache. And it suggests that prices aren't likely to come all the way back down. I suspect instead that what we are going to see with European natural gas prices is a higher plateau, and that we're not going to go back down into the base formation, but that it's exceptionally unlikely that we're going to go all the way back up to the peaks around 800 either. So this exceptionally volatile period is likely to get progressively less volatile over time, but we're still in the volatile stage. So if and investors are beginning to look at what it will look like when the dollar eventually peaks, we're not there yet. But some of the emerging markets are starting to turn around. We had a really impressive upper dynamic today from the Indonesian market. And it was on the back of just efforts to try and stabilize the currency and to try and ameliorate some of the pressures that are coming to bear because of inflation and the cost of sustaining the price controls on the oil price. But the Jakarta stock market index is firming from the region of the 200-day moving average. Of course, that's in local currency terms. If we look at it on a US dollar ETF, it's firming from the middle of the range, and a sustained move up through $25 would complete the range. We've also seen some more positive action from the Malaysian market, which is firming from the 1400 area. And Singapore is positioning itself, I think, as the new Hong Kong. So, Straits Times Index is bouncing from the 3000 level and is a little bit over sold in the short term. But because it's so heavily weighted by banks, then it's unlikely to be immune from selling pressure internationally. Then, obviously, if Singapore is the new Hong Kong, the real Hong Kong was also in negative territory in here today. And the Chinese government is attempting to stabilize the renminbi. That's taking a toll on the stock market, which was in negative territory in here today. We've certainly seen a pause in the renminbi. It's around the 7.2 area, but this doesn't look like anything other than just that, a pause. And the longer term trajectory is for additional downside. Now, when we think about the property sector, there's a lot of money will need to be spent to stabilize it. And we do appear to be at the end of the go-go years. So, it's likely that many of the private companies will go bust or will be nationalized, and the state-owned companies will prosper. And that's pretty much exactly what happened in India. So the Nifty index is bouncing from the 200-day moving average. But we should just also put into, I think, consideration that the rupee has been rather weak. So if we just look at this on a US dollar basis, it hasn't been quite as strong, but it hasn't been certainly the weakest market either. So we're certainly seeing that if we think about where is the epicenter of risk, well, the epicenter of risk is in financial engineering. And if we just simply want to characterize what has this bull market been over the last 12 or 14 years, it's been a boom in financial engineering. So I was chatting with a real estate agent last night, He was saying that one of the things that he's noticed over the last few years is the number of LMAs that he's arranged for people to buy expensive properties. And he had one client last year who funded their entire house by staking their stock portfolio as collateral. So the way that works is that you have your highly appreciated stocks. You don't want to sell them because you don't want to have to pay the capital gains tax, but you do want the bump in your lifestyle. So you go off and you stake them as collateral. And then, as long as the value stays reasonable, then you simply pay off that loan and you pay off your mortgage. But of course, when stock prices go down, you might be asked to post additional collateral. You run the risk that interest rates having rose, it will depend on whether you were able to secure a fixed rate or a floating rate note. And then, of course, if the bank decides that they want to sell your stocks, well, then they will just go ahead and do that. And of course, then you will take the capital gains hit as well as the capital depreciation hit, as well as having to pay the bank. So when we just look at some of the leverage that's under the surface, that's clear from the retail sector. Well, we have the problem in the UK pension sector that exposed leverage in UK pensions, but the weightings of alternative assets, and particularly commercial properties that are sitting on major endowments and pensions, that's a really significant lodestone. So, if we think then that this is the bubble for financial engineering, well, emerging markets haven't really been participating in that. And the Brazilian market is steadying from the region of the 200-day moving average. If Jair Bolsonaro wins the election in 2 weeks' time, then the chances are the market is going to break on the upside. And Petrobras has been paying this really whopping dividend, 30-something percent, for much of the last 2 years. Well, Petrobras was the piggy bank of Lula da Silva's party. And when they left office, then it was able to run as an independent company again. So it's firming now from the lower side of its base formation. If Bolsonaro wins, well, the chances are then that Petrobras is going to see that dividend yield contract by the price rising. And we're at a really rather interesting point here because the Brazilian real has been among the strongest currencies in the world, and there's a clear succession of lower rally highs. So there is the real potential that it's going to be countries like Brazil, Mexico, Indonesia that lead us up out of the impending recession because they don't have the same leverage. They've had higher growth rates. They're generally commodity exporters. There's going to have to be a lot of infrastructure built as we look towards the future. One way or another, a lot of infrastructure is going to have to be replaced. And there'll be a lot more state-directed capital because governments are going to be in the driver's seat as interest rates rise and as taxes rise. So it's quite likely that it's going to be commodity-related markets will do well, and we are seeing early evidence of outperformance. So I think that's certainly something to pay attention to. And the technology sector needs low interest rates to thrive, and we've had a really significant breakout. So it's, I think, exceptionally likely that the zero interest rate environment is over. And that we're going to see a higher low for interest rates and yields when this recession has run its course. And then we'll see higher highs the next time we have an economic expansion. And that'll be the beginning of a new trend. Or at least we've got the beginning of the trend now. It'll be the confirmation of that new trend. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.